We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is WSV, the Solid Verbals Friday news broadcast. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. My co-host is Dan Rubenstein. You give us a download, we will give you the world. Today's show brought to you by PlayRunTheBoard.com. Compete all season long against the entire Verballerhood for a chance to sit on our board of trustees.
Yeah.
The deadline to enter is this Saturday, September the 4th. At 11:59 a.m. Eastern time before the first kickoff. Get in now. It's a pick 'em game. You pick 10 games a week. At the end of the year, we're going to pick the top five finishers and hand them seats on our vaunted board of trustees.
What does it mean? Unclear. Unclear. We are going to be held to account by you, potential board of trustee member, potential trustee. And there are weekly stuff. There's all sorts of things happening, but it's going to be an incredible time for you to compete against certified and premium verballers internationally, right? We're opening this up to international competition.
But at this hour, three things to know, Dan. I'm giving you a raise. Texas A&M has re-upped and recommitted to Jimbo Fisher. Also, player coach at South Carolina with Zeb Nolan going from graduate assistant to now the starting quarterback of the Gamecocks, as well as some other moves around college football. And finally, by the numbers, we'll talk to Bill Connolly from ESPN.com. Bill C. is on your side talking through the SP Plus and what some key additions or subtractions from your favorite college football teams might mean as we move forward into this first full week of college football. But Dan, we start at the top. Texas A&M has re-upped with Jimbo Fisher. They've extended his deal for 3 additional years. This contract replaces the 10-year, $75 million contract he signed just a few short years ago. This one is for a little bit more. He'll be making on average about $9.5 million per season. So it's a full commitment to Jimbo Fisher. They like where things stand under his tutelage. Per our friends over at 24/7 Sports, Texas A&M has the 8th most talented roster in all of America, Dan. Good move, bad move, over the top move for Texas A&M. Where do we stand on this?
Not my money. Do whatever you want. A coach is worth what somebody is willing to pay him or her. So here, my general thought is we haven't seen the fine print in this contract. And a lot of times coaches will sign these extensions to guarantee a raise for assistants or the assistant pool or additions to facilities or the athletic department as a whole to get all of those things down on paper. From A&M's perspective, recruiting and winning and the general position of their program, in large part due to the last couple of years of Jimbo Fisher, is in a great place. So I don't fault somebody for being excited about their coach. It's a much more justifiable extension given that A&M was on the edge, on the precipice of the college football playoff last year. So in terms of trajectory, it's a show of confidence. He was already making a ton of money. But yeah, in a world in which you do need to sort of show recruits, show their families that you have all the confidences in the future of the program, that it's 10 years and what, like $94 million is what's remaining? Yeah, that's Jarrett Allen money, Ty. That's pretty good NBA center money. So I get it. I would be curious to see the escalating and the descending buyout numbers over the course of the years and the dates thereof. But I don't know that they were competing with anybody for Jimbo Fisher's services, but as we've seen, he's not afraid to look around. So I get it. It's a show of confidence and it's not my money. So I guess good for A&M. If they're feeling good, I'm feeling good.
Jimbo Fisher, 26-10 in his short time now at Texas A&M, but that includes 9-1 last year in the COVID year, where, as you said, they were on the precipice of making the college football playoff. They have to like where they're at. We knew that it was going to take a little bit to build the momentum to get his guys in there and start to move things forward. But I think we have come to understand that Jimbo Fisher brings with him from Florida State a ton of credibility, having been there before and having built a really successful program. Maybe petered out towards the end. Perhaps that's why he left. But Texas A&M is definitely in a better spot now than it was when he took over that operation. And I like the move. I like the move, especially in an SEC that has driven itself crazy in the Nick Saban era, everyone trying to better Alabama. A&M might be the next closest as we look forward into 21 in the SEC West. So we'll see, but I think a good move to retain his services, a better move given the fact that it's not our money.
And fascinating to see. He will finally have his quarterback this year. He didn't recruit Kellen Mond, and this is, a true turning of the page in terms of the Jimbo era. And I'm going through the same thing. Mario Cristobal has tied himself to a quarterback of the future at this point now, a few years in. And the other thing I was going to mention was, I think A&M brass, A&M fans, the A&M universe has gotten used to a certain lifestyle. They are currently an SEC power. Ty, if you started flying private everywhere and somebody was like, do you want to fly business class? You're like, I just don't know if that's who I am anymore. And so A&M went 9-1 and finished what, fifth or sixth? And that's who they want to be all the time now. And so they're dotting every lowercase J to do so. I get it.
Yeah. And the other factor to consider is now with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the SEC, the pressure will be ratcheted up even more to have a stable coaching situation and continue any momentum that you've had pre the entry of those two rivals. So I like the move from the standpoint of establishing continuity, from the standpoint of sticking with what's been working for you. It's a lot of money, but that's just where we're at in college football. The money is not going to go south anytime soon. In other news around college football, former South Carolina graduate assistant, former backup at North Dakota State, former backup at Iowa State, Zeb Noland has decided to exercise his sixth year of NCAA eligibility and is expected to start for the South Carolina Gamecocks, at least in week one. We'll see where things go from there. South Carolina had the football injury to Luke Doty, who was expected to be their starting quarterback, and they were a bit in a lurch trying to find the next guy up. It turns out Zeb Noland is that guy. A great story around college football, one I'm sure every announcer, I'm sure every broadcaster will be sure to discuss on the broadcast, but Zeb Noland wasn't particularly lighting the world on fire in his time as quarterback, but nonetheless has proven that he is Division I and FBS capable. And so here we are with Mr. Nolan being the starter for South Carolina.
Yeah, in 2018, he was not that good for Iowa State, though he did have a good game against Oklahoma. There was just down games against what appears to be TCU, and it wasn't great. And then 2017, he barely played, but he played against Oklahoma State and Baylor and was pretty good against Oklahoma State, but did throw a pick and not as good downfield against Baylor. But that was, you know, whatever. It was a different time. And then he was Trey Lance's backup last year. So an FCS backup last year. I suspect he will be only okay. But a weird, crazy story nonetheless. And Ty, here's your added value. The name Zeb can be short for Zebediah, Zebedee, or Zebulon.
I like Zebulon. I don't know if that's the real answer.
I pray that South Carolina is starting Zebulon Nolan. That's all.
That would be tremendous. So Luke Doty, I believe, was a converted wideout. And part of what they liked about him at the position was his athleticism. It's a different story altogether with Zeb Noland. He did play a little bit for North Dakota State. He played with a depleted roster of guys who had gone to the NFL, guys who had opted out because of COVID. So his expertise at the quarterback position is something we will soon come to know as he will play against some teams in the SEC. But yeah. Definitely a story to follow, an interesting story that I would expect we will hear much, much more about here in the coming days and weeks.
Luke Doty, by the way, the number four dual threat quarterback coming in to a four-star coming into South Carolina. So may have been moved around stuff to take advantage, but yeah, came in as a quarterback.
Has a very unique skill set for sure.
And with that, let's send it up to Ty in the Sky.
I'm up here in the chopper, Dan. Traffic already starting to back up. We're not even to the weekend. We've got crews still on the scene of a fender bender in Minneapolis last night. Stay away from that. Looks like a nonstop week of games, though. If you have to use the roads, if you have to get out there and do anything like a normal human, Saturday morning is probably your best chance to get out there. You could chance it later in the afternoon, but with all the action, you may not make it home in time to see a photo finish. Allow some extra travel time. Make sure you're at home in time for that big Clemson-Georgia game at 7:30 on Saturday night. Not going to be too hot out there, so you're only going to be sweating this one out if you're worried about the Tigers winning without Tyler Davis or Justin Ross or Nolan Turner.
Rumoredly.
Back to you in the studio, Dan.
Are you dry where you are, right? There was crazy moisture, wetness, rain, downpours, hurricane-like conditions. Is everything all right by you?
We're okay. We're okay. Yeah, we're good.
Okay, just making sure. I think this is the point in which we say it's time for Bill C on your side. We all need people willing to stand beside us. And on WSV, Bill Connolly is here because Bill C is on your side. Bill Connolly, ESPN.com, ESPN just in general, all over the place. Of course, you know SP Plus, and he works all year long. He doesn't parachute in for September. The man grinds it out because, again, he is on your side. Bill C, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm ready. I think I've officially reached that mental state. There are a lot of things I'm not ready about over the coming months, but this is one of the things I'm ready for.
I like it. All right. So you have one of the things that's interesting is because you're at ESPN, you have access to more data than ever before. You told us that the last time you were on. So does that mean that you are able to, I don't know if it's more accurately, but more specifically and in a more detailed way, add to what and how SP Plus calculates all year long?
SP Plus remains kind of its own thing with its own inputs. I think the biggest thing that I've found with having the dashboards and whatnot that we have at ESPN, I've been able to, I have more tools for description, and that's been super fun. Finally getting snap count data, for instance, that actually is part of the returning production formula now, which is new. But otherwise, it's been more just about like being able to dig deeper and deeper into, you know, this team passes the ball really efficiently. Why? And being able to kind of differentiate between one good team and another good team and stuff like that. So that's always fun because at some level, every single team in the country is unique. And it's really fun finding the ways that each team is unique.
Is there that team that you can specifically remember as you look through, have you pore over everything that you're like, wow, that is interesting with either with or be not because of more data, but just because there are more doors open that you can sort of paint a fuller picture. Is that a team that you've enjoyed seeing that fuller picture for?
Well, one of the things that I had fun with, I did this for a few quarterbacks, I guess, but Graham Mertz last year. Now, making anything of Graham Mertz is a super weird season where, you know, he comes out and completes whatever it was in that first game, 20 of 21 or something like that. And then all his receivers go away and he's terrible for about a month. And then it gets better at the end of the year. Like, it's hard to know what to take away from 2020 as a whole for him, but it was, what was fun was looking at his, you know, just like the grid, the pass charts of where he went with the ball, you could very easily piece together, like, he's looking short and to the right as he's doing his drop back. And then if that doesn't work, here's what things probably go awry from that point. But you could almost kind of see just the way things were bunched and whatnot. You got a very good read on what he was trying to do or what Wisconsin was trying to do. And, you know, again, whether that says anything for 2021, we'll find out. But it was kind of neat just being able to look graphically and figure out tendencies like that.
What in terms of this weekend's specific matchups? So you obviously, SP Plus makes predictions. By the way, I like the idea, and this is true of any formula, that like you've come up with something. You are tweaking something every year. But it's not like you can fully explain why and how your formula does what it does, where you're just like, don't ask me, ask the algorithm, ask the formula. So was there anything that jumped out to you in any sort of surprising way as SP Plus calculated some predictions?
Yeah, I mean, whenever possible, I try to at least understand what it's seen, even if I don't agree with it. And one of the things that is certainly harder to agree with on this week's projections, that would probably be Alabama by 9 over Miami, or 9.9, sorry, get it right.
Yep.
That's one of the biggest disagreements of the week between the spread, which has been around like 19 and a half, which is amazing because we all just like, well, yeah, Alabama's going to cover that. But like Miami's a borderline top 10 team this year, and we're still just assuming Alabama beats them by 3 touchdowns or whatever. And you know, we have evidence for that as well. But that one's been pretty tricky. And I think, I mean, the major things it sees at in Miami specifically, I mean, Alabama is still projected number one. So it's not like it's underestimating them. This is a really, really interesting Miami team. They have been good historically on defense. They slid at the very end of last year. They just seemed to run out of gas the last 2-3 games of the year, especially on defense. But this is a team that was extremely explosive. This is a team that was still very, very good defending the pass. They couldn't defend the run, but they still, you know, they do a lot of the big things you're supposed to do to be a good college football team. And they were now third in special teams last year, which was a dramatic change from a couple of years ago. So they do a lot right. And they return almost everybody from last year. And, you know, I don't want to overstate the importance of this game. I mean, really, it's just survive Alabama and then move on to the winnable part of your schedule. But why couldn't they challenge Alabama for at least a little bit here? With, you know, they might have the better quarterback in the game, at least to start the season. Bryce Young's going to be amazing, but maybe, you know, maybe not out of the gates, especially against a Miami team that's going to pressure him more than he's ever really been pressured before. So why not Miami? Why wouldn't they be able to hang out and make this a pretty fun game for a little while? I hope they do. It'd be super fun to follow a top 10 Miami team and be able to write about that for once, or top 5 even, but it's probably pushing it. But I'm really curious what they're capable of. I'm also really curious what UCLA is capable of, because my numbers love UCLA.
Yeah, I wanted to go there next, actually. UCLA, according to your numbers, wins the game outright 32-31 over LSU. So a number of factors here, and I guess maybe we could talk about how the SP Plus would factor some of that stuff in or not factor some of that stuff in. We have a situation where LSU is traveling west. They're on the road. They're a 3.5-point dog, depends where you look. They are also in a unique situation where they basically had to pick up shop and go to Houston to avoid Hurricane Ida, which I'm assuming your formula is not going to take into account. But talk us through what the SP Plus sees in a game like this, which is one that, frankly, Dan and I had a lot of trouble sussing out.
Yeah, I mean, LSU is a mystery, like the biggest mystery in the country this year, just in that, like, they could really go 6-6 or 12-0. And I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, the warning, if it's on the 6-6 side, you know, last year was just warning signs that coordinator changes alone couldn't fix. You know, maybe that, you know, everything goes in that direction. And the new plan, now that all that record setting talent in 2019 is gone, maybe the new plan is not all that good, but doubtful, you know, it's still unlikely they go 6-6. But on the flip side of that, you know, the talent is ridiculous, and Boutte, and maybe Max Johnson's ready to be the number one quarterback, and all this talent that you look at top to bottom, you know, if they're 10-2, 12-0 or whatever, kind of makes sense. They got the talent for it and the recent history for it besides the super weird COVID year. But SP Plus is just going to split the difference, right? They were, I think, 45th last year. As I've been saying, worst title defense since Notre Dame in 1950. And they're projected to improve to 26th. Yeah, sorry for the Notre Dame. but yeah, they're projected 26th, which basically splits the difference between first and 50th. And that kind of makes sense in my head. But UCLA, you know, this is all about experience for UCLA. They did improve. They were top 50 last year, 46th in SP Plus. They went 1-4 in one score games. They should have had a better record than they did. And then they return almost literally everyone from last season. And one of the only guys they lost was Demetric Felton, who his backup last year, Britton Brown, was better. Britton Brown looked great last week. Zach Charbonnet looked great last week. They really do seem to have just about everything they need to be whatever Chip Kelly can be in 2021. I don't know if that's top 30 team, if that's top 15 team, whatever it is, but they're never going to be more experienced than this. And they've got a lot of upside. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson still scares the hell out of me at pretty much all times. Every pass he throws is like 30 times more urgent than it really needs to be. And that, you know, that's why they're probably an underdog on Saturday, but they've got a lot to offer this year, especially in the run game. The defense looked really good being more aggressive last week. It was Hawaii, but it looked good in an aggressive mode.
Yeah.
So yeah, why not UCLA? Why not Miami? Why not UCLA?
Well, and one final question on that game. LSU was horrible against the run last year. And, you know, how much of that translates? How much does any of last year translate? How did you grapple with that issue when putting your numbers together for 21 here? Because it's just, it seems like such a mystery unto itself. How much do we weight what we saw in 2020?
Yeah, LSU fans say 2020 didn't count at all. I've heard that all right. Season, but
same for Oregon, by the way, just to be clear. 2020 did not count, even though they won the conference. We okay. Don't need to talk about what happened.
I mean, maybe it doesn't. Like, I'm not convinced. I'm always of the opinion that, you know, just as I've always said that we can learn about a decent amount about a team playing, you know, a cupcake or an FCS team or whatever. I think we learned a lot more about teams last year than maybe the fans of unsuccessful teams would suggest. But one of the things I did for the final projections that I put out a couple of weeks ago was I did think about this a lot, like the idea of adjusting. The biggest component of preseason projections is taking last year's SP Plus rating and adjusting it for returning production up or down, basically, based on how much you return. And the thought of doing that for 13 game Alabama and 3 game Ohio just didn't really compute all that well to me. So I basically created like a sliding scale where if you played a lot of games like Alabama, and I mean, LSU played 10 games, so that kind of, that's mostly full that's season, true. Even if there are a lot of injuries and whatnot. If you played a lot of games, then it basically the projection machine runs as normal. But if you played 3, 4, 5, whatever, then it was more based on like the 5-year history and the recruiting numbers and some of those overall program health components instead of specifically what you did last year. So LSU, yeah, they had injuries, but a lot of guys who they're going to be counting on this year played a lot last year, too. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they might really only be a mid-20s team this year. We just have to see. But for like the Arizona States of the world, yeah, it's, I don't know that we learned a single thing. I hope we did, because Arizona State was crazy last year and they could quite possibly be the most chaotic team in the country, but we don't know. Yeah, we barely saw them.
The big game of the weekend takes place in Charlotte Saturday evening. You've got, per the SP Plus, Clemson winning by a 28-25 score over Georgia. At time of recording, there have been some rumors that perhaps Tyler Davis along that Clemson defensive line might be out with COVID issues. Have not seen confirmation on that. But I guess a two-part question. First and foremost, what does the SP Plus see relative to that game? Why does it like Clemson a little bit more? And secondly, how much would the loss of a big player like a Tyler Davis swing the outcome, again, per the SP Plus, in either direction?
I can't even pretend to worry about the Clemson defensive line. I realize, I mean, he is one of the more veteran players on that team, but they just have, like, of all the areas where you can afford to lose a guy, the Clemson defensive line is pretty much set, I think. So I'm not going to take that too much into consideration. If I removed him from the projections, it would maybe change the game by, like, by 0.1 or something like that. I think basically where Clemson has the advantage still on Georgia is more than anything else, just recent offensive history, right? I'm looking at their projections like by unit. Clemson's projected fifth on offense and fourth on defense. Georgia is projected fifth on defense, but 16th on offense. So like everything else, like every single piece I wrote this entire offseason, it basically comes down to, can you trust a four-game sample that we saw from JT Daniels last year? And if you can, and I mean, Joe Burrow hinted at what he was going to do in 2019. He was phenomenal the last four games of 2018. And just like we discounted JT Daniels' numbers for the fact that he only played really one good defense in those four, Burrow only played one good defense in those four as well. And it did end up being kind of predictive. Sometimes it is. And obviously, Daniels is going to need healthy receivers to throw to. That seems to be a little bit of an issue right now. But if that was, you know, what we saw from them last year, being able to actually use the whole field in the passing game, if that's real, then, I mean, they could be artificially low in SP Plus just because it was such a small sample. So I'm excited that they're playing this game, because I'm tired of speculating about freaking Georgia. I've been doing it all offseason. I'm ready to find out if they're actually going to be really good, and they don't have to win, but Clemson actually kind of needs to win this game more, I think. But, you know, I'm just excited to find out.
As you sort of alluded to with Bryce Young, that like you think he's eventually going to be really good. He appears to be really good, but maybe he won't be really good in his first start against what we believe to be at least a pretty good defense. I'm curious if you have noticed anything early on in seasons that certain sides of the ball, certain types of plays, is there anything that comes to define the first couple weeks of a year before things sort of go back to expectations or things become what they are? Is there something weird about the first couple of weeks that you're like, it's skewed with this, it's not skewed with that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, if you think about things in terms of a projection system like SP Plus, I mean, it's not going to know, like, within a 3, 4, 5 games, we're going to basically know what we need to know. But
right,
it's going to be wrong out of the gates about some teams. And, you know, I just think back to like JT Barrett at Ohio State, his redshirt freshman year, where he had that horrific game against Virginia Tech. And then was fine, you know, from that point forward. Like, but just, you know, sometimes a new starter gets fooled, gets overwhelmed, gets pressured. And I'm excited that Alabama's playing Miami, because it might torch Miami for all we know, but Miami's going to pressure him and hit him harder and run after him harder than anybody else ever has in a real live game before. And he's going to have to, we're going to find out exactly if he's got any flaws. We're going to find out what they are. So it's a good game for him in that regard. But I do think, you know, I'm trying to will chaos to happen this year. I'm ready for,
so ready,
if not a 2007, then at least like something like a 2013 or something, just because it'd be really super fun to talk about again. But the fact that Ohio State plays Minnesota and Oregon early, the fact that Alabama plays Miami and Florida early, the fact that Clemson plays, like, Uyagalelei plays Georgia right out of the gate, that's fun and could produce a couple of surprising results, because we assume over the course of a season, Stroud and Young and Uyagalelei are going to be awesome. It's just they might not be quite as awesome right at the start.
You have an opportunity right now to plant your flag. You are deep in all of these teams, deep in looking at how SP Plus is looking at these teams, deep in seeing who teams do and don't have, what schedules do and don't offer teams. So if you have that opportunity right now, Bilsey on your side, final question, to plant your flag now and say, This is a talking point. This is a team. This is a player that you might not be thinking about right now, but come week 8 or 9, you're going to say, "Ooh, wow, good for them."
Man.
Like ties all in on NC State. Why? I don't know. But like, is there that team where you're like, look, the elements are there for them to have an, not out of nowhere, but like a really fun thing that we're not anticipating right now.
Well, I will say this. I wrote a piece earlier this week about how to like get the most out of the college football season, how to enjoy it the most. And part of that, one of the items on that list was basically like follow the chaos teams. I was talking about Arizona State as a chaos team.
Sure.
I basically listed out like, here's my stab at who the chaos teams might be. Arizona State, Mississippi State. I think Houston was on the list. Maryland. I didn't put Ole Miss on the list because I thought there was a slight chance they might be too good to be a chaos team. So maybe that's my answer. Maybe that was kind of a subconscious thing. Like maybe Ole Miss is actually going to be pretty, not only fun, they're definitely going to be fun this year. But if they have just a top 50 defense, they might not. But if they do, other than Alabama, like what game are they guaranteed to lose? They get A&M at home. They get, you know, Louisville is basically like their mirror image in the ACC. And so, they can probably handle that one. But there's not a single like guaranteed loss besides the trip to Tuscaloosa on the schedule.
Done. All right. Bill C is on your side. He is on Ole Miss's
side. I didn't even know it till I was speaking just now.
Here we are. We're talking things through. Please, 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 please read Bill Connolly at ESPN.com. Buy. It's the 50 greatest, 50 best.
Best.
50 best college football teams. You can get on Amazon. You can get everywhere, wherever. Quality books are sold. It's a fantastic read. Great on the beach. Great on the toilet. Great before bed. And it's quick. It's easy. It's the best. So Bill C, on your side. Until next time. Thank you.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
In business! Big news this week on the NIL front, Dan. Quinn Ewers.
Oh.
Standout quarterback who decided to reclassify so that he could get on campus sooner. The incoming freshman for the Ohio State Buckeyes has reportedly signed a $1.4 million deal with an autograph vendor, Dan. That's a lot of cabbage for an incredible head of hair. And Quinn Ewers still going with the kind of frosted tips slash mullet look, which I approve of and enjoy. The deal is with GT Sports Marketing, and it is for a name, image, and likeness deal. This is the biggest deal that I've heard of, the biggest singular deal that I've heard of. My guess is that it won't be the last, but Quinn Ewers was very much the crown jewel of this past recruiting class, at least on the quarterback side.
Does this affect how you feel about NIL, Dan? Does this affect anything whatsoever, given the fact that this kid is really just a backup at this point in time?
I suspect this is not a deal in which he is handed a novelty check for $1.4 million. I suspect this is a deal that could be worth up to $1.4 million, provided he hits certain benchmarks, that he win the starting job at Ohio State, that he excels, he's all conference, he's all American, he's Heisman caliber. Like, there is going to be, I imagine, this is a deal that could be worth that, not novelty check for 1.4. But look, the backup quarterback market is strong in Columbus. So there's that. And he was signing deals. He signed a deal with some sort of beverage company. We're not here doing commercials, but he signed a deal with beverage, some kind of iced tea or something beforehand. So cashing in, and big picture will be fascinating to see where he does or doesn't end up, because I suspect he's not going to be super keen on sitting for two or more years. So if CJ Stroud is not the answer, it looks like Quinn Ewers could be, but that's going to be a fascinating quarterback room.
It's also a bit of a risk for the group that is signing Quinn Ewers to this multi-year, potentially over $1 million deal.
Could be a steal if he meets expectations, I suppose.
Could be a steal, could be a bust. We'll just have to wait and see. But these are the types of deals that I think are, in effect, testing the waters for the NIL legislation. We still don't know where this is going to go, and how a big money deal like this proves out in the long run for a top flight talent like Quinn Ewers, that I think is going to help set some boundaries and set some ground rules for how different entities play it moving forward. Fascinating in the world of business.
Totally.
Elsewhere, Nebraska leaning on donors to keep its sellout streak alive. Of course, Nebraska lost a game last week on the road against Illinois by a 30-22 score. There were tickets available for this week's game against the Fordham Rams, New York's one true team.
Obviously.
There is a streak, has been a streak, of 375 consecutive sellouts at Memorial Stadium. And that's a streak that they're very proud of, which dates all the way back to 1962. Some donors with money decided that they wanted to swoop in and get that number up to 376. The tickets that they are buying, the freebies, as they were, will be given out to school-aged children and their families in a project called the Red Carpet Experience, Dan, which is actually a pretty cool deal.
Yeah, that's not so bad. Nebraska did a better job, or whatever, people reporting on this, or, you know, whatever was the PR element to this. They did a better job of, like, yep, we're bringing in a bunch of kids who otherwise wouldn't be going to games, rather than, we need to keep the sellout streak alive.
It kind of undermines it, doesn't it?
Yeah, the latter is much cooler than the former part of the story, that the, you know, kids are going to see this game. Sellout streaks are something that I can't imagine who that interests, but apparently it interests donors. So a cool thing. You see it across. I've seen it with the NBA, you know, buying out large swaths of tickets, especially for teams who aren't necessarily thriving, so that kids can go see basketball games. So ultimately, a cool thing with a little bit of weird wrapping paper.
Nebraska will also provide a free hot dog, popcorn, and a soda to those receiving tickets. So that's a pretty good deal. They will give complimentary tickets out to any students in eighth grade or younger and their parents for the game against Fordham. Nebraska's athletic department has also acknowledged that there are available tickets for some of the remaining home games.
Also, a unique experience for these kids that they get to see Nebraska likely win a football game. That someday they'll be able to tell their children and their grandchildren yet that, yes, they were in the stadium for when the Huskers won a game.
Dan, speaking on a more serious note. What's on the Dan Scanner at this hour?
I don't have any Dan Scan about the Huskers, but I do see that the SEC is taking a stance against teams unable to field a team because of COVID, in that it's going to just end up in a forfeit. And also the team who is able to field a squad is going to be able to appeal to the league if they suffer any sort of financial consequences because of a game being forfeited and canceled, that the forfeiters will have to play a part in reimbursing the forfeitees. If I'm using words correctly there. So that's sort of been not the financial element everywhere, but that's been the forfeiture element has been, you know, pretty commonplace now in the sport as they look ahead, you know, if teams are not able to meet protocols, so are not able to meet minimums via protocols.
Teams have been forced into this box to some extent by conferences now. We saw the ACC. This is a very similar policy to what the ACC had. There's now such a thing as a double forfeiture where if neither team can play, it goes as a loss for both.
Yep.
Which is, I think, as
it's new,
ubiquitous as you can be.
Yeah.
With the rule, you just make it as consistent as possible. They've been very clear across the board that they don't want there to be a similar situation as last year where games are being canceled. And maybe last year in the height of things, they were willing to deal with that as a conference, those weird scheduling changes. I think what conferences are saying now, the message that they are sending, that is no longer acceptable, that there is a way that you can prevent against this from getting as bad as it did a year ago. And if you choose as a team to not follow some of those precautions, then it's on you. Love it or hate it, that's just where we're at as a sport continues on now into 2021. We've talked all throughout this episode about how the big money is essentially ruling the day. So the SEC has followed suit with the ACC and some others, and they're just not going to take it. They want to play football.
Can tell you this. It's not going to be fun at the end of the year if we are comparing an 11-1 team to another 11-1 team, and that the first team lost a game by 14 and the second team went 11-0 on the field but has a forfeiture. Yeah. How do you compare those two instances? I imagine the committee is in, at least internally, if we're talking about a playoff situation, is at least internally, or if you're looking at tiebreakers for conference championships and divisions, whatever. Internally, there's going to be some way to decide how they're going to weigh things like that, but there's not a clear right answer.
What else do we got in the dance skin?
Otherwise, Loyal Crawford, a running back out of Wisconsin. There's a couple of different situations out of Wisconsin in the running back room there. He has been dismissed from the team. He brandished a knife during a dorm fight, which is not great.
Aggressive.
Not great. He was not the starter or even the number two. It looks like that's Chez Malusi and Jalen Berger. And speaking of running backs and thinner rooms, Oklahoma is dealing with an extraordinarily thin running back room now with Kennedy Brooks and Eric Gray, the two lone remaining guys in that room after guys have been dismissed, guys have transferred out. Now it's Trey Bradford, the LSU transfer in, is now back in the portal. So two scholarship running backs, it appears, at this time on the Oklahoma roster heading into the year, which doesn't seem like enough. And with that, Ty, what's the weather looking like?
What a weekend for college football, Dan, huh?
Oh, my God.
Woo!
Finally!
Ideal weather from sea to shining sea. First big weekend of the season. Just a few patches of rain in the middle part of the country. Bring your sunscreen if you're going to be out there at the Duke's Mayo Classic in Charlotte, Dan. Bountiful sunshine, 84 degrees if you're going to be tailgating outside that one. It will dip down into the low 70s. Nice, comfortable weather for a big game and for kickoff. Mostly cloudy in the 70s up in Madison for the big matchup with Penn State, but nothing a few beers and brats can't cure. 90 and sunny in the Pacific Northwest. The Ducks are going to kick it off against Fresno. It's hot for the Pacific Northwest, but it's nothing for Fresno. They should be used to it by now. Their shoes were melting on the field last week in 120-degree heat for their big win over the UConn Huskies. And finally, it's going to feel like 109 for Steve Sarkisian's first game in Austin against Louisiana. But Dan, when you're coaching at Texas, you know you're always on the hot seat. Back to you.
Coming at you. Good tag there, Ty. That's a pro move from you. Always on the hot seat. It's going to those some spicy temperatures. Eat anything in Austin and you will be successful. It's a fantastic place to eat. If you're in Eugene, Oregon, I recommend the Glenwood for an outstanding breakfast right next to campus. Charlotte, I've mentioned Futobuta for ramen, but another, I'd say underrated. The more I investigate Charlotte, really good food options there. Did you mention any other place? Oh, you mentioned, no, that was it. Charlotte. Oh, Madison. Find somewhere that serves, I don't know, cheese curds. It's always delicious. That's it. That's all I have food-wise in conjunction with your weather report.
And that does it for WSV News Radio on this Friday, September the 3rd, the Friday before the first week of college football action. Dan, we hope wherever this news report finds you that you're doing well, that you're ready for this onslaught of college football that is in front of us all Labor Day weekend long. Don't forget, today's show brought to you by PlayRunTheBoard.com. It's a pick'em game. It runs all season long. You compete against the entire Verballerhood for five coveted spots on our Board of Trustees. But the deadline is tomorrow. The deadline is Saturday, September the 4th at 11:59 a.m. to sign up
Eastern
and get your picks
Eastern.
Eastern. Get those picks in. Otherwise, you're just going to have to wait until next year, Dan, and you wouldn't want that.
No, basically the minute before kickoff, that's when you got to get your picks in by Saturday morning kickoff, week one. As you're listening to this, this is the only week that matters. Get them in. PlayRunTheBoard.com.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, this has again been WSV News Radio presented by The Solid Verbal. We will talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.